You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedian's Comedian Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Christmas. Pappies are returning to the show after a four-year absence that has seen them get up to all sorts, including making two series of their BBC Three sitcom Badults, which we will dissect in great depth. Some of them have won awards. Some of them have been nominated for awards. Some of them have just been funny. And you know which bones, which of those are most important to us. So, ladies and gentlemen, happy Christmas to you. This is a raucous, slightly drunk, very live, very funny, and salacious. And also, I mean, genuinely, we got some really good stuff. There was a difference of opinion. That was good. There were laughs. There were tears. Pappies, return to the podcast.
It's good to be back.
It's lovely to have you. You've just spoken more than you spoke in the entire first time you guys were on the show. I've specifically asked Ben behind the scenes, Ben, producer Ben, to ensure that you were sat here so that every so often I could go, now you say something.
The thing is, what you're going to find out now is that you really...
It's funny you say the thing is, Ben, because...
What do you mean by that, Ben?
That puts me in mind of something that Tom and I were doing earlier on.
Yeah.
No, go on, sorry.
Oh. No, I mean, it genuinely won't work now you've said that. That's the problem
idea.
With it.
That's the idea. Let's begin with that. Matthew, why do you hate Ben so much? Tom?
Well, it's not hatred.
It wasn't a real question.
Holy shit, I almost answered it.
Ladies and gentlemen, and I should point out for those of you listening at home, hello, I always like to refer to the listener as an individual. I heard that was a thing radio people do.
Very true.
I might edit that. I won't. Hey, you. The you at home. It might interest you to know that after a two-hour booze-filled spectacular version of the Pappy's Flat Slam Podcast.
I didn't know it was 2 hours. I just found out. We did 2 hours. So sorry. Yeah. We started at 7:04 and we ended at 9:04. That's not... That, by the way, is unacceptable.
Wow.
I do like it. I think they often say that clowning is the ability to fuck up and take responsibility for it. So really impressed that Matt is like we're sorry.
Yeah.
So just to get everyone up to speed, during the show beforehand, Pappy's committed to finishing the bottles of Advocaat that are behind them on account of this. Can we just see where everyone is?
I've got a lot of catching up to do. I tell you what, let's do the great leveller.
Hello.
Oh, that seems unfair.
That's wow. That was a good... Jesus Christ, that was a leveller. Well done. So, I was sort of joking. But anyway.
It's like the thing about Advocaat is you get sick before you get drunk.
Yeah.
It started because
your theme drink, isn't it?
It's our drink. We started doing Christmas shows way back when we first started doing comedy. We were doing Christmas shows at the old coffee house. The old coffee house.
The old Advocaat house.
During the interval, Matt was coming up saying, "Don't worry, I'm not that pit. It's just for reading. I was just drunk for reading."
I meant reading and speaking. And we used to do shows at the old coffee house, and we started doing Christmas specials and buying Advocaat because it was a very festive drink. It's the snowball drink for Christmas.
Yeah.
And then that somehow just became the thing we drank on stage all the time.
Yeah. It's,
it was like the last of ever. I remember seeing several of your avocat shows in Edinburgh where, like, on Dirty Monday at the end of the Fringe, whenever
yeah, we
should
did charity
left.
Shows. Yeah.
You did charity shows and cane bottles of avocat during it.
Yeah.
Whose idea was that, and was it perpetuated by one of you in particular? I have to say, I've always assumed it was sort of Tom punishing you. I don't know why I made that assumption.
Like, Pappy's is sort of a weird kind of bullying. Like, that's sort of how we operate, in that we sort of, like...
Bullying with love.
Bullying with love, exactly. Killing with kindness. None of us is willing to back down, so we're all doing it, but none of us want to do it.
This is absolutely vintage ComCom.
But at the end of all of those shows, I'd normally drink a bottle and a half of avocat, and you have to just run off and just, like, you puke pure custard. And so if I... If there's a bit when you're like, oh, Ben's talking a lot, I'm off puking. That's what it is. I'm not...
The worst thing
look
about...
out for that, guys.
The worst thing about those out-of-the-car specials that I remember as well is because we'd be drunk, we'd have very intense debriefed sessions. Because when you're drinking a bottle of out-of-the-car and trying to do the Edinburgh show that you love, like, the timings are all off. So we'd find ourselves being like, well, that sketch didn't work because we were doing a bottle of out-of-the-car. And like, we'd, but because we were drunk,
of course it did.
But because it was the end of Edinburgh, we'd have these very intense kind of debrief sessions of going like, yeah, that we threw that there and that didn't work.
And also,
like,
the festival's over, so we don't need to
Doesn't matter.
Well, the other thing as well, and this is something we used to do a lot when we first started, and we don't do it anymore, I hope. We sort of do. But we used to talk a lot about, like, very personal shit on stage because we were so hammered. And that was sort of, well, I mean, you can feel how awkward it is right now. It was like that level of awkwardness.
Can you give us an example?
Oh, I can think of a couple, yeah. Like, we...
Tell you what, give me two... Code words.
I was going to say, because if we discuss it now, we'll be doing the
we're
same
doing it again,
thing again.
Yeah.
But it's like, this sounds, without meaning to sound really pretentious, really early doors, but like, the one thing we've always strived to do is like make things real on stage between us. So it's like when you're doing an Edinburgh show and you've done it for 3 weeks, in order to keep making things real, you have to keep on delving. So like, for example, we have a running joke about one of our family members where we found out one of our family members likes to look at a certain type of video online. And we
it's
brought...
it's Ben's dad.
No! I wouldn't have done that.
Let's assume for the sake of the recording that that was repartee, and we still don't know. Because I was quite enjoying the game of, we're trying to cold read you.
And so, like, we brought that up on stage, and the audience didn't care, but we did, and it was, like, suddenly, like, a huge injection.
I mean, I'm kind of fair game. It's fine. There's no pushback from me.
Yeah. Well, it's not you. It's your dad.
Your weird, weird
there's
dad.
There's a lot of pushback from him, but that's what he's into.
Yeah. That's what he Googles.
Don't go on Urban Dictionary and type in pushback. You're not going to...
Back and to the left. Is that
lovely callback to a different podcast.
That's an inter-podcast callback. So we'll need to say at the beginning, when your one goes out, you'll need to say that you've got to listen to that one first. So you want to keep it live on stage between you so that the relationship between you is real, so that you find freshness in what you're doing by genuinely having arguments.
Sometimes.
It doesn't ever start as an argument. Like, I think it never starts... No, but it doesn't start where you're like, oh, I could do this thing to... Like, the idea is always, in any comedy show, is always to try and make the audience laugh.
I mean, this is the real shit. This is the real shit right here.
Here's the insights.
You're getting under the skin.
You're getting a real peek behind the curtains now, guys.
Mission accomplished.
They'll all be doing it. They'll all be doing it. It's the problem now.
The secret's out.
The Pandora's box has been opened. But the idea is always to sort of to entertain and to make an audience laugh. So, like, the worst is when you start a thing, this will be hilarious, and what you've done is not only pissed off a room full of people, but you've also upset your two best friends in the world. That's sort of when it can go horribly. And that kind of happened. That happened a bit on tour when we would do that, you know, because every single night doing the same show, and often the audience is, you know what it's like being on tour. It's different every single night, and not necessarily in a good way, in an exciting way. So, but the problem is, once you've crossed that line, you go, I've crossed the line, but there's nothing funny about apologising. So,
yeah, keep digging.
I've got to just keep pushing beyond that line and hope that the other two are going to get on board, or the audience are going to get on board. And what happens is neither of those things happen. And you're then.
But when it works, it's brill. Like when it works, it's like you know when you're playing. Oh fuck me! Anyone play golf?
This by is the like way, Third Streets album when all of my Skinner stuff was about the problems of being
like,
successful.
When you're playing golf, if you're playing a course that doglegs off to the left,
God!
So no, but hang on, hear me out.
Another deep cut from the last podcast. Please do more observational stand-up because Tom Parry, his experience of life is so different from everyone else I've ever met.
Okay.
He's got another real common touch. He's got a problem with towels. He doesn't know what's going on.
This is not an analogy that will ring true for everyone, but like...
No. Or in fact, anyone.
Okay. No, if Tiger Woods is listening, but there's like... When a hole dogleg's off the left and there's trees there, the way you play the hole is you go that way and then you take your medicine and you play that way. You take two shots. But there's a phrase coming off the tee that's called taking the tiger line because Tiger Woods can just knock the ball straight over the trees. So, like, the idea is, am I going to take the tiger line or am I going to play the dogleg in two shots? And it's like, when you play the tiger line, 7 out of 10 times you'll lose your ball. 3 out of 10 times it'll work and you look like Tiger Woods. And it's like, I think with geeks...
You have never looked like Tiger Woods.
Tom blacked up on stage and 7 of those times it went badly. The other 3 times it went worse.
I think sometimes with a gig, you kind of think, right, we can do our 2 shots, we can take our medicine, we can be on the green in 3, or we can take the tiger line, and sometimes when you take the tiger line, you end in the woods, and you go, well, I know why I did it, but it didn't work out, but when it works out, it's like you're on the green in 1, and you're a fucking hero.
But maybe just confer with the 2 other people you're doing the gig with.
I guess golf
before
is a...
Before you say
there's
that
a reason,
shot.
There's a reason there's no 3-man golf.
Yeah,
there?
Yeah. Yes.
So are there examples of times when you've taken the tiger line and just fucked it completely?
Wait, can I just say, Ben and I are not on board with the tiger line.
It's there, though.
I'm 100% on board
amazing.
With it.
Amazing.
I don't know anything about golf. I don't know anything about golf, but I sort of followed the rhythm.
Yeah, exactly. And what I want is in about 5 podcast time when you're doing like Michael McIntyre, you'll be like, Michael, have you ever taken the tiger line?
Because it's great.
No!
Straight to the green for Crosby.
There he goes.
That's what you call in golf a bullseye.
Let me ask you something else, because
I'm just picturing other comics listening to this and going, who is this audience?
And where do I get one?
Why are they so lenient?
I do want to talk a bit more about your... You mentioned in separate, like, doing stand-up as opposed to doing sketch stuff, and I do want to talk later on about your sort of separate endeavours. Tom with his award-nominated stand-up show.
Thank you for saying that.
Matthew with his stand-up show.
Yes!
Oh! And Ben. Now... before...
How dare you?
What you've just seen there is 2 dick slaps with 1 stone.
But before we get to that...
What a dick.
I want to ask you about... I was thinking, because it's been such a long time... Like, we've known each other since, like, we started comedy.
Yeah.
And it's been listening back... I was listening back today on the train to the episode that we did 4 years ago, which is, like, such an incredibly long time ago.
Yeah.
And yet no time at all. It just seems to have passed by in a flash. It's time to be reflective this Christmas. Doesn't time elapse? It really does. So what I wanted to ask you was, how do you think in the last 4 or 5 years, say, because you've done loads of different stuff since then, loads of projects. We'll get onto Bad Adults in a little while.
Yeah. Beautiful. Hang on.
That is the biggest laugh Bad Adults ever.
What is that funny? What's so funny, guys? It's not Bad Adults.
But I wanted to ask you, what are the ways in which you think each other have grown most as performers or writers in the last 4 years? Like, what have you, what change?
That is a really good question that I'm not going to answer.
Well, let me put it another way. What change have you seen in each other, in each other performatively in the last 4 months?
Balding?
Yeah.
I think we, well, one of the commitments we made, like about 4 years ago, maybe, probably around about that time, we made a commitment that we wanted to keep on working together. And we weren't sure how. We're still not sure how. Like, genuinely.
Yeah.
If you'd have been sat in the pub with us on Thursday, you wouldn't be laughing right now, because it's a very real conversation we're having.
Yeah.
But it's like, we're not sure how, but we know we're going to keep on working together for as long as we're working. But that, the way that we work together will change. And so, like, I think in terms of, like, seeing how that's affected it, is like, when we've stopped being looked at as a whole, as the Pappies guys, then it's like, it's very clear that Ben is by far and away the only good actor in Pappies. And it's like, he's a very, very good actor. Sorry, Matthew.
Sorry, guys, I was just acting smug.
I mean, it's good, isn't it? It's good, isn't it? And so, like, Ben can go for acting roles and get them. He's one of those guys who can get an advert casting all the time and just be in adverts. Like, it's true, though, isn't it? Because, yeah.
And nothing else.
No, yeah. And I think in some ways, so that's made a lot of sense. And Ben's started to become, like, an actor. And Crosby's always been the person in Pappies who sees the jokes in every situation and every scene. And it's like, there should be a joke here. Oh, that's the joke. Or we need to find a joke here. That's the joke. And Matthew always finds the jokes. And so he's increasingly becoming a comedy writer who writes for TV shows and does writing rooms and is employed to find the jokes. And that makes perfect sense. And then increasingly I'm trying to write, like, longer form narrative stuff. And looking back now, like the way we used to make our shows, normally I'd be the one who'd go, I think maybe this could be the show. And then that would become the arc of the show, like the story of the show. And then, we'd fill it with jokes together. But like, I'm starting to write more narrative stuff on my own. So the way that the three of us have started to work independently makes perfect sense to me from how we used to work together as Pappies.
That's true. There's a sort of like macro, micro and visual. Oh, my God. I can tell you now, you are as surprised to hear that come out of my mouth as I am. So, but I think the idea that, like, Tom is big picture, sees the concept, that's always been Tom's strength. I am, like, moment to moment to moment to moment, which is jokes. Ben is very visual. He's like, here's how the show should look. And I think, to a certain extent, that's kind of how our careers have panned out and how things... You know, Tom is trying to write more long-form stuff. I'm going into entertainment shows and writing jokes for them. And Ben looks amazing. So,
I'd also just like to underline how, a minute when Tom described it, he was writing more long-form stuff. And when you described it, Tom was trying to write more long-form stuff.
Lovely. I'm so glad you saw that. I'm so glad you picked up on that, Stu. Lovely.
Let's be honest. Now, no, but that's, you know, that's the directions that we are kind of pushing in.
And Ben?
Yeah, what they said.
Specifically, like, I get the point that you've both made, the same point, different words.
Yeah, I made it first.
Yeah, totally right. Tom, let's call it Tom's point.
Sure, Tom's point that I sort of punched up.
And you're probably not getting this as podcast listeners, but I made it very visually entertaining.
Ben did an interpretive dance. That's while
beautiful. Lot of cartwheels.
But specifically, like, looking at these two chumps over the last 4 years, what are the things that you've noticed along the way of going, oh, like in quite a specific way? Ben sitting next to me. There's no escape, mate.
No, I think it's true. It's difficult to kind of elaborate on a point that's already made twice.
Do a different one.
Do a different one, mate.
What about football?
Right, guys? No, no, I think it's true. We have kind of found our own niche within the group. But also, ooh, I think it's a good point, but I think that it's still important that we all three do the same things within the group as well. So I've often been guilty of this, where I'm like, oh, well, Tom's good at that, Matthew's good at that. So you talk to them on those specific points. But actually, as a three, within what we do, there's quite often times where it's like, oh, actually, that's a great gag from Tom, and that's a great overarching idea from Matthew, and that's a really salient point from Ben.
I think he got away with that, ladies and gentlemen.
So this is Pappy's, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, you can hear how much we all love each other. What an absolute joy to have these guys back on the show. We'll hear more from them in a moment. Of course, you must, if you haven't already, download the Christmas special episode of Pappy's Flatsh... I can never say this on the first go. Flatshare Slamdown. Yes, often abbreviated to Flat Slam, so it's just doubly difficult to say. But you can go to wherever you got this episode of the podcast and download that one. In fact, I mean, I should have said this at the very beginning, but we recorded them sequentially. So if you listen to their one first and some of the gags made it through, you might hear certain callbacks to things that were said in that episode in this one. But let's face it, come on, it's Christmas, and who can be bothered to go back and record the opening blurb? Not this guy. So, loads more great stuff coming up from Pappy's. Good deal of advocaat being drunk during this show as well. I managed to swerve all of the advocaat. I'm very lucky. Is it advocaat or advocaat? Difficult to say. Couple more things before we get back to Pappy's, because I want to hear the rest of this episode myself. Remember to subscribe for your Christmas special treat, okay? That is going to go out probably, when will I do it? Something like 4 days from now. It's only going to be up there for 1 week, so you're not going to get your free Christmas gift if you are not subscribed to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you subscribe. I'm going to put it up there very briefly and hoik it away again, because, you know, it's a thing that I don't just want to give away for free, but you guys, you subscribers, get to listen to it. The tour is starting to sell, but we can always sell more tickets to the tour. If you go to comedianscomedian.com/tour, you can see all of the places in the UK that I'm going to come to. I should have a list of them now, but I drove to some of them. I'll tell you more about that in the Not Waffle at the end of the show. I'll tell you about it then. There's no need to repeat it now. So if you are someone who would like to support the tour, if you know that you're going to come, or you suspect you might come, if you have a place of work which is a cafe or a shop or has a staff room where you could put up one of the posters, and really, I mean, I suppose what I'm hoping is that people see the posters and go, who the hell put that up in the staff room? You have conversations, you say, hey, it's this guy, he's really funny, and then you bring them along as well. But if you would like to be part of that, and a few of you have already done this, so my very great thanks to you, just send me an email, info@comedianscomedian.com, with the subject line cavalry, and we will start a conversation about that and how many posters you think you need, and I'll chuck you a few in the post. I mean, I did that last year. It's impossible to tell whether it was successful or not, frankly, but it was just fun to do, and it's good. I like communicating with you guys, and I feel very cherished by you lot as well, and hey, it's Christmas, so let's enjoy that. Thank you for your donations, comedianscomedian.com/donate, if you'd like to set up a recurring payment of, for example, £2 a month, or if you want to do a one-off payment of, what's the equivalent? Because it's Christmas, let's say, if you want to drop me a one-off payment, the equivalent of getting someone a DVD. Well, that's reasonable, isn't it? Buy me a DVD for Christmas, by which I mean, I'll just have the money. That's better than vouchers, isn't it? Right, I'm just giddy laughing at this one in the edit, so let's get back to the fabulous Pappy.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
As much as you feel comfortable, tell us about the conversation on Thursday.
We've been kind of like semi-gigging still. Like, so we've been doing like maybe one gig a month, two gigs a month. And we
Is that Secret Dudes or is that
club gigs.
We'll get to that.
The general sense was where we're at the moment, which is every month we put out two podcasts together, two different podcasts, and we do a live night at the Soho Theatre where they've given us a residency. So like we sing with a band and we have great guests on who are our friends to do comedy and like we just have this big fuck around. So like every month we're doing three definite things together. But then on top of that we've been doing occasional live gigs. And we haven't changed our live set for maybe...
That's a knowing laugh.
Yeah, but for maybe like...
Yeah. Can we ask the fan base? No, pick a number of years.
Yeah, what do you think we're going to say?
Go on.
No, fine. Fucking, come on. I mean, it's four years.
At least
really 4 years. Like since
it's been 4 years.
Since we wrote the new sketches for Last Show Ever, like our 20-minute... We've got 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes that's like... as we see it, a bulletproof club set, you know? And we haven't changed that since...
By the way, we're doing the Comedy Store on the 12th, so...
Let's find out how bulletproof
anyone
is.
Anyone be pierced by bullets, they couldn't hit them.
Are you really? You're doing the store?
Yeah, we're doing the store. Yeah.
Have you done it before?
No, Don saw... It's a Monday night, and Don is doing these sort of cabaret nights, and he saw us in Edinburgh. I'll call you, I'll tell you what it was like. He saw us and was like, oh yeah, you work over 20 minutes because he'd only ever seen us do hours in Edinburgh. And he said, come and do like the Christmas cabaret. But like mid-December, it doesn't really matter what day of the week it is in mid-December because every night is Friday night.
Sure. For those that don't know, the Comedy Store in London, certainly in the UK, is reputed to have the highest quality control of any booking policy.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
We've done
charity gigs there a bunch of times, and every time Don says, "Oh, that was great. I'll get you down. You're really good." And then we never hear from him. So it's like, we have done the store.
So he's called us up, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I hope it goes well. You know.
Although we also did the store on one night, and it was a Montreal tryout night.
Oh yeah.
And we died. Were you there?
Just wiping your hands by clapping twice. I thought either she was there, she knows the relevance of Montreal, or she's Canadian. Dirty hands.
There was a review of the night, and I believe it was Chortle, that said,
it was Chortle.
If the wheels were starting to come off the gig, they were kicked forcibly off their axis by pappies. that was a nightmare, wasn't it?
It's that funny thing as well that you always remember word for word bad reviews. Like every comic, especially the comics you say, I don't read my reviews. And you go, why not? And they go, well, because, you know, the Independent said this. And you go, well, that's reading reviews. But like, that still is etched on the back of my brain.
When they started to come off, they were kicked forcibly
kicked
off.
Just
while we're on the subject, any others? Stinkers? Reviews?
Well, started a review in Edinburgh once by saying, every year these sketch groups insist on returning to the Fringe. Yeah.
He reviewed us and Idiots of Ants and the Penny Dreadfuls. And I was so tempted to text him and say, every year these critics insist on... But I am a gentleman.
I was tempted to find the cunt and kick the shit out of him, but that's a different thing.
Fair enough. It was a sub Vic and Bob sixth form common room nonsense was Logan
Brian Logan's in, first
Brian Logan two stars yes. Guardian
who then later gave you five
we won him round
he came around because we're so good but yeah
we were
so good weren't we 2012 but yeah it's they do stick in the mind any others that.
No, I don't think so. I think that's...
Nice.
Yeah. But the chat was basically, we've done that set so many times now, and it's like, we're not getting anything from it anymore, and it's like, we should either stop doing club sets or come up with a brand new club set.
And guess which one we picked.
And because we're doing quite a lot of solo stuff at the moment, like, the fact that we can put two podcasts out a month and have a live night, and it's like if we just take care of those, it means we can still be productive, still work together.
But it's that thing of like, I think a lot of comics have it, or a lot of, well, I don't know, maybe if they don't, but we feel like we're underachievers. I think like we feel like we're not doing anything. We went for a meeting the other day and we were like, we're not doing anything at the moment. We're doing two podcasts a month and a live residency, which is always new every time we do it. And he was like, that's loads of stuff. You're actually doing loads of stuff. But because we, you know, this other thing we feel is sort of slightly stagnated, we're like, we sort of flagellate ourselves about it. But I think it's probably a good idea. Like, one of the best things we did in our career as Edinburgh performers was take a year away.
Yeah.
Just go away from it for a bit. Just stop doing it for a bit and then come back. You know, the thing is, we've always done so many different things. We've all done stand... What, go on.
Can I just say this? I direct Edinburgh... We all direct Edinburgh shows when we're not in Edinburgh because it's a lovely way to still be part of the festival. And I directed Beasts last year, who are very pappies in their energy and their the structure of their shows.
Yeah.
And I'd been up there for the first week, for the first six shows, and the venue staffs in Edinburgh, they're all students. They're all, like, 18, 19 years old. And I was waiting to go into one of the Beast shows, and there were these two venue staff, and I arrived to go and see Beast, and they, like, started chuckling at me, and I was like, what are you laughing at? And they said, oh, we were just talking about you, actually. We were saying you'd be so good as a member of Beasts. Like, we could so see it. Like, you'd be so brilliant. And I said, oh, I'm kind of... I'm in a sketch group, actually. They're called Pappies, and they kind of went, oh... And I said, yeah, in fact, we were in the same venue. We were in this venue and we got nominated. And they said, what year was that? And I said, oh, it was 2012. And they both went, oh. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, God. Like, that's so long ago for these people. And it's like, you go, it's like really, that's one of the nice things about Edinburgh is like, if you're not active and you're not there and you're not doing stuff, then you're kind of dead in the water.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things.
It is, though. It's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Is there, given that you're not, I mean, it was called Last Show Ever, not necessarily your last show ever, but is that, but because it was so well reviewed and nominated, did you win or did you, I genuinely don't remember.
They don't exist. We won.
No, we didn't. Such thing as an award. Is there any fear in terms of, like, if you produce another hour, if you would ever consider going back, then you're going back to a legacy which is like, well, we were heroes a few years ago. Let's not shit on the legacy.
I think it's always difficult when you stop. If you take a year off, then that kind of grows, the kind of fear that your last show is a really good one. So if you, you know, like, if you're in the rhythm always going, it's fine just to kind of roll with the punches. And what we did there was, you know, we haven't been back since. So every year that kind of grows where you kind of go, well, if we do go back, it's going to have to be at least that good or better. So it's not actually the show that's intimidating. It's kind of the period of time where that's kind of sat and kind of just
I guess if you're,
festered.
Yeah, I guess if you're I guess if you're there every year, you're allowed to have a few years where you go, like, well, yeah, that was a bit of a dodgy one, but here I am next year doing another thing. Yeah, but at the same time, like, it's good to have had that one year where you were like, yeah, that was great. And actually, by the time we finished the tour, like, we did that show probably 25 times in Edinburgh, 26 times in Edinburgh. Then we did it for 20 nights at the we did it on tour for 35 dates, then 20 nights at the Soho Theatre. By the end of it, all you can see are the floors. You know, all we could see were like, that bit isn't quite firing, and there's a big gap between laughs, you know, in this moment. But then we had to go off and do another project, which was Bad Alts. So we end up going off and doing that. And then kind of like, the thing with Bad Alts is I think we thought potentially that could lead to us doing more live stuff and people going, oh, we're fans of Bad Alts. But there was a sort of weird disjointed thing between people not knowing who, like, Pappies and, like, it's because everything we fucking do, we call it a different name. which is, like, you know, has helped us maintain our indie rock integrity. But at the same time, means that, like, oh, do you like Bad Alts? Yeah, I do. Have you heard of Pappies? No. What about Flatshare Standdown? What's that? What Secret Dudes? Who knows? Like, it's every time. It's because we like giving things names. So we had this thing where we did a little tour post Bad Alts, where we retoured Last Show Ever, and everyone who came was people who come to the last tour because they wanted to see the show again, and occasionally someone would have a bad old CVD and go, could you sign this? But very, very rarely. So it was like this sort of weird thing that we thought telly might lead to more, like a bigger live following, but it sort of didn't really.
There was just a disconnection between the two entities.
Oh, but potentially, or people just fucking hated the stuff we did on telly. I mean, that could also have happened. I don't really know.
I mean, if you read Twitter,
yeah, that's what happened.
I can remember quite clearly wanting Last Show Ever to be our last show ever. Like, it's one of the reasons why I wanted it to be called Last Show Ever. And one of the discussions we had was like, we can't call it Last Show Ever because it sounds like it's going to be our last show ever. And in the back of my mind was like, I think this will be our last show ever.
But that's only because I just recently read your dad's internet history.
Yeah, so that's right.
I know what the next show is going to be about.
Like, I actually really thought this will probably be our last ever Edinburgh show. But then Phil Mack, well, the promoters didn't want us to call it that because they thought there's going to be more shows. And so we really did well to sell it as like, it's part of the theme of the show. It's a dummy. There's the narrative of the show. But in my head, it is our last show ever. And I think if it's not our last show ever in terms of Edinburgh, then it better be there better be a really fucking good reason that it isn't. And in my head, there's a reason why we called it Last Show Ever.
So is this what you were talking about on Thursday? Is that one of the...
Well, that was the question,
like, what's No. This is all the stuff that question was intended to bring up, and I don't, you know, obviously, it was a confidential chat.
No, don't need
to share any more.
No, we're happy to share it.
But I'm interested in the different personalities and where you're coming from on, like, whether there is a clash between what you want from it.
I think creatively, like, I had a really nice chat with a guy who said he's reading a book about chess. To switch from golf to chess.
I love that you're removed from it. I had a chat with a guy who he was reading a book about chess.
So, and I know fuck all about chess, but in fact, I used to be in a chess club because you got an early dinner pass at a secondary school. So we used to say we're going to chess club, jump the dinner queue.
Yeah, save up for that sweet photocopy of mine.
Absolutely.
Which, by the way, is a
gotta
deep
have a
cut,
goal.
Because that is... a reference to something that won't be in the podcast.
That's just for you people here, but I'm keeping it in my one.
Beautiful.
No sense.
And he said, like, the thing with chess is, he said, like, there's different stages of the game when grandmasters are playing each other. And he said, there's the long-term strategy, there's the end game that they all know they're working towards, and one grandmaster has a strategy that he's working towards, and so does the other. And in between them working to the big strategy, there's a large part of the game where you're literally just moving the pieces around. And it's like the small bit of the game is you're moving the pieces around, but actually there's a long strategy, and they can do the moving the pieces around because they know there's a long strategy. Like, I think if you know what the end game is, what the strategy that you're working towards is, then you can do the moving the pieces around, and because there's a bigger plan. Now, like, I think for us, in terms of Edinburgh, I don't know if there's anything else we want to do up there that we haven't already done. And when we did Last Show Ever, I really hope that will change. I think it will.
I think that's true of, like, you know, not just Edinburgh, but sort of the career. I think that's it.
It's like
we did a bunch of things we wanted to do, and now we've done them.
Yeah, and yeah. So it's like, so after having done Edinburgh and done it to the best of our ability, and then done a TV show that we got two series of and got to write and be in it ourselves, it's kind of like, actually, what is the end strategy then? If it's not what you've already achieved, and then if you haven't got an end strategy, then you are just moving pieces around. I think that's a big question for me, is like, what's the end strategy? And I used to know, and I think we played that game, and now the new strategy isn't there yet. And so we're moving pieces around. And I think we're very sure that we like playing with each other. all right, come on.
I like to think this audience were laughing with joy at the resolution of the chest. Yeah. I think most... No, that guy's shaking.
No, that's not our crowd. But I think it's that.
And is that view shared by all of you?
Well, I don't necessarily, when someone asks me a question about myself, refer to chess grandmasters or Tiger Woods. But if I could just...
What, you don't take the Tiger line?
If I could just...
What's wrong with you?
If I could just reference the life of our Lord Jesus Christ, then... I agree. I think we've had goals some goals that have been goals we've wanted and some goals that have been presented in front of us and we've gone, yeah, we'll take that goal. And I think the goals we wanted was to do Edinburgh very, very well. We always had that as a plan from when we first started. The sitcom, like, we pitched for it, but it slightly took us by surprise that it happened as quickly as it sort of did. And we started pitching that show in 2008 and it got commissioned in 2012. So it's a long time in the sort of, you know, not a long time in the grand scheme of life, but a long time, you know, 4 years to be waiting to see if something actually happens, and then it does. But at the same time, I don't think our goal was ever to have a TV show. We loved doing live. We wanted to do that live stuff. But at the moment, we've done Edinburgh to an almost award-winning standard. We've done our own sitcom. You know, we did two series of that, and phenomenally proud of the finished product. And now it's like, what is it that we want to do? And I don't think we've never sat down in a room and gone, that's the new thing. And I think that's the, you know, that's sort of where we are at the moment. And that's kind of why we decided we're probably going to not do as much live in 2017, because why would we do that? Well, we're doing a lot of old material, and we're you know, from a purely financial point of view, we're splitting the money three ways, and you know that the money on the circuit is fine. It's, you know, and if you split it three ways, it's not fine. What's the purpose unless we're going to write new stuff? And actually, we've got the creative outlet of doing Flatshare Slam now, which we love doing, and has I believe it has 130 listeners, and they're all here tonight. we have an audience who love what we do, and they come and see the live shows and they listen, and it's great. It's amazing. And so we keep doing the live shows of this, and then we keep doing the secret do's, and that seems to be sort of scratching that itch, I think, for me anyway.
And for you, Ben?
I think it's tricky for me because I find comedy a very collaborative thing, personally. I've never done a solo show, and so I like to work with people when I do it. So I've directed some shows over the last couple of years, directed Tom's and a couple of others. And so,
yeah, cheers for that.
You directed Tom's award-nominated show.
Yeah. I did. Oh,
I
yes.
didn't realise you were in that game.
And Matthew produced.
I was going to say that when we get back around to that, like the solo stuff, it was like a team achievement because I did the solo show, Matthew effectively produced it, and Ben directed it. And it's like,
I think you're misusing the word effectively. I produced it effectively. I didn't effectively produce it.
Oh, yeah. So when that nomination came in, it was very much a team win, really.
Yeah.
And it was celebrated.
What happened to the prize money? Oh, just out of interest. Because you get a bit of money for being nominated.
Do you? What?
I totally get where you're coming from. It's a shame that slightly takes the tooth out of the joke, but you're fair enough.
Yes.
But I want to get back to Ben being all sad.
Yeah, Ben, are you happy? Are you happy, though? That's what we need
Ben,
to know.
Are you happy?
But are you happy?
No, I'm not sad at all. But I do find that I like to work with people. And so that's the tricky thing where I think when I look back at what we've done, I think like we were most effective when we worked together and we did Last Show Ever. And so it's potentially tricky where you're not, you know, we still work together all the time. And it's just kind of finding new ways for us to work together and also new ways for us to work with new people, which we do quite a lot now.
I cried when...
You cry?
Yeah. When we...
When do you cry?
This is like... This is a really shitty thing to... This is like as a confession, but like the one thing I think about Edinburgh and the one thing I tell everyone whoever we direct and stuff is like, you can't be obsessed with the award and the award doesn't mean anything. When we got nominated for Last Show Ever, and especially because I really thought it was going to be our last show ever in Edinburgh, and I wanted it to be our last show ever. I know that. I think that's why we pushed hard for it to be called Last Show Ever. And then we had the reviews, and then we got nominated. And in my head, and to jump sports again, like, you look at Nico Rosberg, right? Right? No.
Oh, my
God.
That's
a really...
Harry.
I swear to God. Harry.
I swear to God.
Harry.
Crosby. Just get into Christ sport, alive. Man. You'd love it.
In my head, like, when Nico Rosberg did... So, yeah, it's exactly that. Like, so Nico Rosberg, Formula One driver, always been second best to Lewis Hamilton, never as good. This year, ground out a result. Lewis Hamilton had lots of mechanical failures, and all he had to do for the final three races was finish second, finish second, finish second. He'd be world champion. And Lewis Hamilton tried to do everything to try and stop him from finishing second. Slow down so he'd finish third and everything. Nico Rosberg stuck at it. And Rosberg, world champion, he's only about 30 years old, world champion, and he quit. And it was a shock to the entire Formula One world. Everyone was taken aback. And he said, all I've ever wanted in my life is to win the world championships, and then now I can stop doing it. And I didn't realise, and I hate myself for this a little bit, not like in a, but like a, when we were nominated for Last Show Ever and it'd been reviewed so well and we were like, everyone was saying, I knew in my head I wanted to do what Nico Rosberg's just done. I knew what I really wanted us to do was win the prize and then we wouldn't go back. And We didn't win, and it was I saw the show that won, and it was an incredible show. Dr. Brown, very incredible guy, but we didn't win. We went to the pub afterwards. It was only like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I cried my eyes out like I sobbed, and I'd held it back. And I didn't want to. I was so embarrassed, and I didn't realise how much I wanted it until we didn't win it, and I actually realised why we wanted it. Wasn't necessarily to win it and be a winner and be like, oh, that's the launch of our career. It's because I wanted to be like, we've won it, and that's the end of that chapter, and that's done. And we didn't, and I was, and like, I think on the panel was Bruce Dessau was on the panel, and he walked past and went, oh, you were so close, mate. Just means you're going to have to come back next year. And I just thought, I don't want to. I don't want to, mate. We've given it fucking everything there, mate. And I cried like a baby. And it wasn't because I felt like a sore loser. It's because I wanted to do what Nico Rosberg's just done. And I just thought that would, for me, that would have been just perfect. And do you know what? To go back on that, that night we did our Advocar special that was booked in. We did the show, then we had a late night Advocar special booked in. And we did it, we bought fucking so much Advocar, didn't we? We had like 20 bottles of Advocar, and we got out there and we were taking the piss out of the whole festival, and Bruce Dessau, who's on the panel, was in the fourth row, and we made the entire show about Bruce Dessau being in the front row. And that night, like, we drank all the Advocar, and it was, without a doubt, my favourite night of comedy I've ever taken part in. It was, like, perfect, because we joked all the way through about not winning. And we took the piss out of Bruce Dessau, and it finished, and there was, like, the room just went mental. And I realised, like, in my head, it was like, it's so much funnier not to win. Like, it's so much funnier to lose. And, like, Pappies are losers.
We're sort of perennial losers.
There's a reason why it's an Advocar special and not like a fucking Prosecco special. Like, Advocar's
Prosecco?
Prosecco! Of all the things to pick for.
By the way, that cements our loser status. Tom's like, what's the most expensive drink? Prosecco.
No, I didn't want to say champagne.
£6.50 a bottle.
I didn't want to say champagne. But, like,
listen,
guys,
we're Lambrini girls and we want to have fun.
Still waiting for that advert to come in, aren't we? But that night was like, oh, do you know what? It's so good that we didn't win, because that night was like, it's so funnier to lose, and like, it, we should
and
be losers.
And also, crying's for pussies. Now let's crying. But you know, that's true. It's that funny thing, because it isn't actually. It's not important, but when you get involved, it becomes important, you know? And it really isn't important, because it didn't really...
Not at all, no, that's it.
It didn't really change anything in that we had pitched the show Bad Alts just before Edinburgh, and before the nomination, we got the commission to do a series, like, straight away. No pilot, nothing. It was amazing to do a series straight away. So we knew what the rest of our next year was going to look
like.
And
that's sort of like getting a series with no pilot is the most... It's kind of the most anyone could hope for from a win.
Totally. I mean, a huge mistake on BBC3's part, but but it was totally amazing. But I fucking, like, the thing I do like about the live circuit, and again, there's a reason we're not doing so much of it anymore because of the, you know, just not turning over new material, but the live circuit is amazing because it gives you a kicking like every 25 seconds. If your joke you think is hilarious doesn't quite land, it's a proper like kick in the stones, and it's that's very useful for comics who are terrible, terrible people who compare like tiny little things to great achievements by sportsmen. You know, it's like that's what you need. You need a constant swift kick to the jaffers every 25 seconds when a joke doesn't quite land. That's exactly what you need.
There's a really good tweet by Luke Haynes on Twitter.
Yes.
Do you know Luke Haynes?
He was in the Auteurs. Yeah,
yeah, he was in the Auteurs in the 90s, kind of like the scourge of British music in terms of... And he said, I love Jarvis Cocker. Jarvis is like one of my absolute heroes. He said, I love Jarvis Cocker, but he's in danger of becoming a curator, not a creator. And there was, but there's something so brilliant. I read that and I was like, there's something so brilliant in that. Because Jarvis has stopped putting out material and started just being like, this song's great and this song's great, and becoming a curator. But unless you're putting yourself at jeopardy, unless you're still in the position of the people who are your peers and you're putting yourself at risk, then there's something so true about that. It's like you can so easily stop and be like, yeah, we were good. Or Jarvis can be like, yeah, I was great. I did that and that and that. But unless the people who don't stop working keep putting themselves at jeopardy, like the risk that you take every time you go on stage and say shit or put out a new song or fucking take a shot off the tee that's over the trees, to come back to that analogy. But it's like fucking Tiger Woods got a quick golf. He's not, he's back, he's playing. He's not as good as he used to be, but he's still playing and he gets slated for it. But like, that's because he's fucking going. And it's like, I think that thing of saying your risk of being a curator or a creator, there's something brilliant in that. To say, like, you can't stop and think, well, that was great that we did. It's like, you've got to keep moving, you know?
Go on.
Why are you stopping?
Because I want to keep... Like, I'm not stopping. That's the thing. It's like, I think the things that we're doing separately is, like, for me, it feels like progress, not like... Like, and it's because I still can't see... If there was, like... We had this chat the other day. You and I think we were drunk and we were saying, like... If ever there was a time for a political show, like for example, like we've never ever done a political show, and I think we all feel very strongly about like the world's becoming insanely politicised since 2012, for example. And it's like, if we put our minds to doing a political show, what would that look like? What would a Pappy's political show be? Would it be any good? Would it be shit? I don't know.
Yeah, it might excite the audience to know we're very right wing.
Well, that's it. That's what I mean. Like alt-right needs, they need to laugh. I mean, they're very serious, those guys, and they need to laugh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Hail Pappies.
Yeah.
And that's the title.
That's the title. Come on.
It's Pepe's Fun Club, and that is a deep alt-right reference.
That is a deep cut.
That is a deep alt-right reference.
Oh,
alt-right, all lols. That's what we're calling the show. So.
Okay. Okay.
I think that's we need a, like, if we were to do more. What I love Secret Dudes. I love Pappy's Bangers and Mashers, our other podcast. I love Flat Slam. All of this stuff is really, really good fun. But if we were to do a big new thing, it needs to be a big turn of the screw. I think it needs to be a big.
Well, I think you need to know what the end game is. It's that to keep on. Mixing my metaphors.
You need to know what
is the Brazilian Grand Prix going
to
be?
I slightly disagree. I think you need to be excited enough by the prospect of finding an end game.
That's it.
You need to know where you're heading, but you need to be excited enough about the prospect of a journey.
Or you just need to put yourself in enough jeopardy that you create something good, regardless of the result.
Well, none of us agree on anything.
Which brings us to Bad Alts.
Yes.
Okay, here's something you said on the podcast 4 years ago before you filmed Bad Alts.
Wow. Amazing, yes, let's do it.
Okay, so on stage you have absolute control. This is dot, dot, dot in between. These are various bits you said. I can't stand the fact that someone over there is going to control what it looks like. You were talking about hypothetically.
I sound like a Brexit campaigner, don't I?
When an audience is in a room with you, they make a creative leap with you. And Matthew, you were saying you can't practice telly. and you said there's a ton of people who don't I can't remember the context for that one. There's a ton of people who don't understand what your comedy is. Made sense when I wrote it down. Let's get back to you can't.
And what did Ben
wait a second, what did I say?
Do you know what? On my list, I've got Ben. And it's just space. So I was expecting expecting you to write something down. But so the point I'm making is that you went into the process of making Bad Alts, I think, knowing that it was going to be very different to the things which were your strongest suit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's talk true. To us, and let's start with Ben, because he hasn't said much
recently. Oh, baby!
Talk to us about going into Bad Alts and the excitement and what you expected from it, and whether you tried to strategize about how you were going to make it how you wanted.
Well, I don't think we did a lot of strategy in that we just wanted to make a funny show. And we loved the process of making it. But I think always from the start, it was a bit of a square peg in a round hole, in that we were doing something in a very traditional format, something that we really like, the studio sitcom. But we were trying to sell that on like a BBC Three audience, so we kind of had this kind of contemporary edge, which none of us have.
And was that a case of, like, they said you can make a show, but it's got to be on BBC Three, and you went, well, let's make a show, knowing that maybe that wasn't the right place for it?
Even more, go on. Even more than that, we wrote the pilot script for Bad Alts as a single camera, because everything we'd been done for telly was in front of an audience. And the translation, when you've got a live studio audience there, is very problematic. And we wanted a direct relationship with the camera, so we deliberately wrote it as a single camera sitcom. And if you if anyone were to go back and look through the episodes, there's like loads of cinema reference, like spoofs of how things are shot. The way they're shot will make it look like that film, and that's the joke, or it'll suddenly look like Jurassic Park. Now, in a studio sitcom, you can't do that. When they came to us and said they want Bad Alts, they said it needs to be a studio sitcom and it needs to be BBC Three. Now, we always wanted it to be single camera. But, of course, if someone offers you the chance to make a TV series, then you take it. But we were always making a studio sitcom on BBC Three. And when you look at the target demographic for BBC Three, which is under the age of 24, studio sitcom is like, it's almost like teaching Latin in a modern day comprehensive school. It's like, it's literally a dead language to those people. And like, there's a reason why House of Fools did well on BBC Two and why Mrs. Brown Boy sells on BBC Four, because the people watching that are all over the age of 30 and they understand BBC and they One. Grew up. Sorry. They understand.
Yeah.
BBC Four is like Paul Morley documentaries about
and that's about how
important the Clash were.
My point still stands. but like that is, it's almost like trying to do studio sitcom to a post-office generation of kids is like teaching Latin. It's like...
We may as well just put out, like, Birth of a Nation.
They just
which
don't
also
understand it.
Fits with our politics as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it was our first pitch, wasn't it? It was our first pitch.
That was what we initially wanted. It's Birth of a Nation, the studio sitcoms.
So like, we knew we were always up against it, but then you either embrace... You either embrace the form and go with it, or you don't. And like, it's like, so we did. And
it was quite funny, actually. Like the jokes we wrote for the first series and the jokes we wrote for the second series were quite distinct, because we would write. I mean, it's still Bad Alts, so this is going to seem a bit weird, but like subtler jokes, like more sarcastic, more sardonic jokes, we would write, and the audience, which would be 300 people in Glasgow, you know, who wanted to see a big silly sitcom. Wouldn't laugh at the asides, they'd laugh at the big jokes, so we sort of stripped away those. But I think the second series we were more successful because we knew what we were doing. We knew, the show was, we knew our voices, we knew what we were doing, and we wrote, so like instead of, we wrote amazing jokes, I think, for that series, but we also wrote really elaborate, really exciting, high concept plots for the second series, more so than the first, I reckon. But unfortunately, the final day that we did filmed the second series of Bad Alts, the final episode, BBC Three shut down. It was exciting.
It was so funny.
It was really funny because we were writing an episode incredible. About like Carabine's office, who was the place I worked. The Carabine promotions office was shutting down as well, and Carabine was like shredding paper and like smashing up laptops and stuff. And we would watch our execs like we'd be filming the scenes and our execs would be running off like talking on the phone to a real office where Zai Bennett, the head of BBC Three, who's now over at Sky, who was our big champion, was going, yeah, guys, I'm off. Like, you know, like he was like fucking off out of there because the BBC Three wasn't going to be a thing anymore. We're very good at closing down formats.
Yeah.
We did kill a programme.
We did the last Comedy Lab. The last series of Comedy Lab.
Was that Mr. and Mrs. Hottie Hot Hot?
No. That was our Pappy's Fun Club was Comedy Lab. Showcase was Mr. and Mrs. Hottie Hot Hot.
Last ever.
The last ever time they did that. We were the last show filming on the day BBC Three closed. So, guys, if you want to work with us, we're definitely a really, really good talisman for good success and good luck. But
could you have done it any differently? Could you have made it work differently, knowing now what you knew?
What we did was we did that for the second series because the first series was six episodes of people learning on the job. Like, we were learning what to do. And there's like, I don't know whether this is something I said or something I heard
something Gandhi
someone
said.
Say.
Either I
Gandhi
said...
Gandhi said, drive the green.
He's a great golfer. Very aggressive. You've got to take the Gandhi line. I know, it's not very aggressive. Sorry, Gandhi's not very aggressive. It's like your first series, you're creating a world, and the second series, you're inhabiting it. And it's so much easier to inhabit a world than the first series.
Yeah, you said
where
it.
Where you're creating it. Kind of sounds like something I'd say, guys. But the second series, we are so fiercely proud of. And we genuinely, like, I would put it up there like this... Two or three episodes in that series where I would say, put that up against anything you want. Like, we are so proud of them. But it's like the first series.
Well, we don't all say exactly the same thing. We say different things, but...
but it's true, isn't it? Like, as soon as that first series finished, I think the overwhelming feeling was, give us a chance to do it again because now we know what we're doing.
Yeah, that was
And then
amazing.
We made the second series and we knew what we were doing and we did exactly what we watch it back. I mean, like, the only thing I'd change in Baddles is I would recast Matthew and I. Like, and that's not a joke.
No, that's
like,
not a joke at
all. I think if we were smarter, well, there's a guy who's doing, the guy who's the lead in School of Rock in the West End at the moment, Luke Barnes. Is it Luke Barnes? He's a great actor, and it's like, whenever I see him, it's like, he should be Tom. I would fucking love it if he was Tom. I would have enjoyed Battle so much if it was Tom, and then any other cunt being Matthew.
Literally anyone. Like,
could have been anyone.
Do you know what?
Any actor.
For me, it would have been Ben Kingsley, but you have to brown up.
I feel like crucially, and actually we had a very funny chat where there was a guy in America who was interested in taking Battles to the States, and they said, would you be interested in being in it? And the overwhelming agreement was like, we want Clarkey to be in it, and cast two American actors, and have Clarkey in there as the token Brit, but like, don't put us in it. Yeah. Like, and I think that was a big realization that came too late, where it's like, oh, I don't want to be an actor. I don't think I'm an actor. I don't think I should be that guy. But I know there'd be a really good actor who'd be really good at being that guy.
The funny thing is that, like, you know, you do yourself down, Tom, but you're a very good performer, but a terrible actor. And I think that's not a... You know, like, you were all at the Flatshare Slamdown record. Like, when you're doing Fanshawe, it's amazing. It's really funny, and I really enjoy it. And it's brilliant. But at the same time, it's like... The thing we're good at doing is being in front of an audience.
It's not acting, though. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you put actors in there.
Yeah.
It's like, that's why, you know, when you look at the young ones, it's like, yes, Rick and Ada in there, but they're surrounded by fucking good comedy actors. Actors, you know? And it's like Seinfeld, and it's like Seinfeld's in there, and everyone else in there are actors.
He's a good actor, yeah.
And it's like, that's what we didn't do. But then that was never on the agenda until the first episode had gone out. And then you watch it, and you kind of go, okay... Like, and I know I can't watch this objectively. I know I have to watch it subjectively because that's me. But even I can tell that I'm not an actor. Like, you know? So it's like, that should be an actor. And that's what I think we will try and do next is we'll write a sitcom that none of us will be in. Or, like, maybe one of us will be in. Guess who?
Which
but like,
one? Yes.
That's
so nice of you to write a sitcom for me. Crosby, coming soon to BBC Three.
When you recorded it... Were you just, you mentioned the audience there. Were you able to invite Pappy's fans to be the audience?
No, we're in Glasgow. So, like, the vast majority of people were just Glaswegians who come and see a studio sitcom. And we worked really hard to make those nights fun. We did what we do. We were out there in front of the crowd. You did warm-up for
one of
them, didn't you?
I mean, so, like, I knew the answer to that.
I was going to say, you did warm-up for one of them, and it's like you saw the crowd, and it's like they are guys who come to watch TV record. There was a few fans in, but, like, not many. And I think because of our success in Edinburgh, a lot of producers in the comedy world go, oh, Pappy's, they've got that cult following. But actually, that doesn't necessarily translate. Like,
yeah, when everyone that watches shows at Edinburgh goes back to London afterwards.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, so that's it. We still have to really work for it. But like, there's a big difference in the direction if you look between the first series and the second series. The guy directing the first series is a very traditional studio director who does Mrs. Brown's Boys and things like that. And actually, like, Mrs. Brown's Boys is a really good example of like something that does take the live and translate it down the camera. And Love or Hate Mrs. Brown's Boys for its script, which is a bit always full of hoary old jokes, really. But the one thing that you can't
like Bad Odds.
Yeah. But the one thing you can't fault Mrs. Brown's for is it communicates down the lens the feeling of love and warmth and family, and that's why people love it, because they want to be part of the Mrs. Brown's
and
gang.
It's like weirdly, it's not subversive, but it fucks around with the form in a way that TV shows don't, you know?
More than we did.
It acknowledges the cameras, which is something that we never sort of deliberately didn't do because Mrs. Brown's Boys was doing it so well.
Yeah. But like, I think, and between those, like, there's a kind of three. So I think Mrs. Brown Boys does that thing, but like, and we were doing our thing, and then when House of Fools came out and was weirdly successful, like when I saw House of Fools, I love Vic and Bob, and they're like one of our absolute comedy heroes. But I watched them do House of Fools, and that was people making a studio sitcom, but with contempt for the form. Like, it's almost like two guys who want to make a studio sitcom, but they want to fuck the studio sitcom in the ad. Like, they hate the studio sitcom. They want to go like, oh, do you know what? Like, we think this is shit, so we're just going to fuck with it. And we made a studio sitcom, but from a place of love, where we loved the studio sitcom, so we wanted to be faithful to it. Now, it turns out Vic and Bob's approach was actually much
way
more
better,
successful
way better, yeah, yeah.
And much more exciting than ours. Yeah. And I think there was a certain... I think we had reverence for the form, and in hindsight, maybe we wouldn't have. But I wouldn't change that second series of Battles for the world.
We must wrap up shortly, but before we do, I've got two other main questions. Were you together when it first went out, when episode one went out?
Yes.
And what was the reaction? Like, were you on Twitter whilst you were watching it, or were you just watching
it? No.
I mean, I was.
Yeah, well, I mentioned that because Ben mentioned that before. Were you?
Yeah, I was. It's okay. It was pretty horrific, but that's kind of what has come to be expected, I think, with comedy. When you're on television with Twitter, it feels as though... You know, we do our live shows and stuff, and Twitter was around when we were doing our live shows, obviously, but... Generally, it was kind of for people who had a vested interest in something. And now it feels as though Twitter's there for people just to comment on anything. And so when our show went out, Twitter was pretty horrific. But
it was funny.
I was all right about it.
Go on.
Kind of like it's kind of how it rolls. It's okay that you think that. It's okay that you... I hope we die of cancer. It's all right.
So many death threats. Right. That's the strangest
thing,
isn't it?
A lot of death threats. A lot of people wanting us to burn in
fires. Yeah, lots
of
fires.
And that must be, given that at that point in your careers, you were just used to love.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you were coming at it new, doing your first ever show. You're squinting. What I mean is, when you've done an Edinburgh run and you've done show after show, you've got a fan base... You perform live majority of your life.
I disagree with that. I'd say used to love. Here's my experience of us doing comedy. Is you come out on a stage and the vast majority of a comedy club think, who are these cunts? Like, genuinely, like, we go, we're going to be silly for you. And they think, cunts. And within 10 minutes, you know, we're going to convince you we're not cunts. That's our overwhelming experience of doing comedy. Is like, we come out, we look like cunts, we're going to act like cunts, we're going to do characters, you're going to think we're cunts. But within 10 minutes, we'll convince you we're funny.
What's the key word here, Tom?
But like, that's very that is true, isn't it? That's true of our comedy gigging experiences. You're all going to think we're cunts. We're going to stop you thinking we're cunts, and within 20 minutes,
I mean, we all know the message
us.
Now.
But that's what I loved about it. I used to love coming out and thinking you hate us.
You know what, Tom? Tom. You know why you love it? Because you're a fucking cunt.
No, I know. But they would.
Puppies
they would,
like, Cunt Club.
They would. A much better title. You hate us. Oh, actually, you think we're quite funny. Do you know what? You really like us. In a 60-minute show, you fucking love us. We did you. Bang. Like, that was the experience. Now
we did you right up the cunt.
Now, on telly, 3 minutes in, you think we're cunts. You take to Twitter. So then you go, that's Twitter. Like, Twitter, there's no kind of, like, watch this and then respond. It's like, give your very first reaction to this now, and everyone will leap on board and start joining in, and it'll start trending. And what we do is we initially make people go, oh, God, what's this? And then we convince with structure, with narrative, and with jokes. It's like, you go, you think this is something. It's not what you think it is. It was all planned all along, guys. We're actually quite smart. You think we're stupid, and we're not. And it's like, that's been a trick we've done for so long, live. And it's like, on telly, people don't wait that long to find out that you're actually clever because they're already reviewing you 3 minutes in.
That's very true. There's a real thing on Twitter where people go like, during a show, or like, I'm watching this show. And you go, you're not. Because you're looking at your phone and you're, and I don't want to sound like a fucking old fogey, but I am. But like, if it's 5 minutes into a show, and you go, I'm watching, you know, whatever the show may be, and I don't like it. You go like, watch the show, because they've made you 28 minutes of television. Watch 28.
Clarky, are you?
Sorry, mate. I'm just, you know,
for the listener at home, a lovely bit of visual business.
And also,
he did a very visual joke there.
And also,
for you listening at home,
also for Crosby's brain, he thought, "I'm smashing this answer." Ben got his phone out and pretended to text.
But
it's true.
That's the thing. It's like
you go like watch a show and then make your decision. And it's the problem with like you know like we had a lot of discussions with BBC Three when it was going out. They were like, "We want you to live tweet during the show," and we said, "We won't do it." Because they said, well, everyone watches it by twin screening. And I'd never heard the expression twin screening before. And it's like you watch the screen of the television, but you've got your phone out as well, checking what other people are saying about it. You know what? Have the confidence of your own convictions and watch a show and enjoy it. And if you fucking hate it, fair enough. But watch it all the way through and then hate it.
That's
after.
It. Like I don't mind going twin screen, but it's like it's that thing of like in an Edinburgh show, you know, if you're going to make a bad joke 8 minutes in, because at 40 minutes... you're going to call back to that in a way that's going to make it a fucking good joke.
Yes.
So you go, I've got you in this room for 60 minutes. You're not going anywhere, which means I can play with your expectations. You're going to think one thing here, but I know you're going to think something else at 42 minutes. So I'm playing a game with you guys. And it's like, we've done that so much. We've done that all the time with our writing. I'm so proud of that. It's what it looks like chaos. It looks like these people don't know what they're doing. Do you know what? We knew all along what we were doing. And that's what we've done so much.
And can you relearn that? Like, that learning is based on a career's worth of live shows. Like, you know, 20 years maybe, all told, of live stuff. Can you relearn a version of what Pappies do in a twin screening environment?
Yes.
No, we're dead in the water.
this is our suicide night. We're out. We're out. We're out.
But the question is,
surrogates.
Can you be bothered to? Have you got have you got the interest? Do you want to?
Yes, but it wouldn't be. I don't see how it would be us. Like, to come down to brass tacks, we are three white, fairly middle class guys in our 30s. Why the fuck would we be pushing to get on telly? Like, what is the reason?
All telly is.
What is the reason? What is the reason we're trying to put the three of us on telly together? Like, if I was anyone commissioning a show, there is no way in the world I would look at us to do it. And even if we look at putting Flat Slam on telly, like, if we wanted to put Flat Slam on telly, why would we put the three of us in it? Like, because that wouldn't be telly, you know? Like, so if you're going to write a sitcom, if I'm going to sit down and write a sitcom, You're not going to put three protagonists who are all from the same demographic in the same position. Let's put three man kids in their 30s who all have nice white Christian upbringings. Like, there's no pitch there. Yeah. You know, there's no story there.
Two of whom can't act. One of whom has a sort of weird messiah complex. It wouldn't work. But also, as well, like,
Tiger Woods complex is different.
But also, like, the thing we've had sort of like we've done the dance and we're still doing the dance with Flat Slam for television. But, and I know I'm preaching to the converted because you are literally a live podcast audience and it's going out as a podcast. But there's something very, very exciting about the immediacy of podcasting that I compare to live. You know, you have a thought in your head, you write it down. Off it goes. It's out there, and I love podcasting, and I think it's a very intimate relationship that you don't get with television. Which, you know, with television you get a relationship where people go, "Oh yeah, I sort of watch that show. That's fine." But with podcasts, it's a choice. You make that choice. You get involved. I'm a huge fan of podcasts, and there are certain podcasts, if they stopped happening, I'd be devastated because they're a part of my week, you know, or part of my month or whatever. And I think that is a relationship that is very similar to the Edinburgh relationship. Every year you come up, you see us in Edinburgh. Every month you listen to our podcast. I think that's the relationship I'm more interested in fostering than I am in sort of following a sort of TV. And I say this as someone who has not made that decision for themselves.
But I think narrowing your eyes at that, Tom, is that...
I narrowed his eyes when he said that he had an idea and wrote it down and put it in the podcast, because that process isn't my process with podcasting. No. You think something, you say it, you regret it, but it's out there. That's my experience with podcasting.
For me, it's worse because I write it 2 days before.
Yeah, that's
and then
it.
I read it and go, ugh.
No, I mean, I think that's why we've embraced podcasting, is absolutely right, because I think that's a form that absolutely fits for us. And what you said earlier about the listener being a specific, like the PBAM thing, I love the idea. I love it when we're talking to one person.
It's but immediate and everlasting and disposable. You know, it's all of those things
together.
God,
I thought I'd said the most pretentious thing tonight.
Don't forget my micro, macro and visual thing earlier.
But like, all I was thinking was with the telly thing is like, I think if we applied ourselves to the TV form, I think we'd have to remove ourselves from it as performers, but from a creative point of view, the challenge to write a show, like... Even in my head, as you were saying, it was like, if you put out a show and you're tweeting as the director, but it's not the director, it's a scripted tweet that links to the show, then you could...
Copyright Pappies.
But like already you can... There's a form there that can help you do the kind of thing, the rug pulls, the reveals, all the stuff that you do in an Edinburgh show, you can do that with telly. But all I'm saying is that if we're going to do that on telly, and we want to keep writing together, but we can't be in it, because there's not a show we can pitch that's us, I don't think... Like, because it doesn't make sense for the three of us to be on screen together.
We're too sexy.
Too fucking sexy and too right-wing.
I think, if anything, 2016 has proved you can't be too right-wing.
It's really tempting that that's such a wonderful moment to end on. I just wanted to ask one final question. And then
are you happy? Do you do Q&A as well?
I don't think we've got time because I've got to get the train to Bristol to see
what it's saying. Yeah.
And also we did a two-hour podcast record.
The last thing I wanted to ask was...
What time is it?
Do you see the legacy of Pappies in other sketch groups at Edinburgh and on the UK circuit? And how do you feel when you see that?
Yes, and sort of delighted. It's nice, isn't it? Because when we first started doing... No, you don't think that?
No, go on.
No, when we first started doing comedy, we were sort of like largely disappointed by the sort of comedy landscape in terms of sketch. Didn't feel like it was... Well, actually, weirdly, it felt very telly-ready, and a lot of the people who were doing it are now on the telly. But we wanted to do something that was exciting to watch in the live arena, and that happens a lot. And I'm a huge fan of new sketch comedy, not necessarily stuff that's been influenced by Pappies, but I love going to see sketch comedy, and I love it when I go like, oh, that's a bit Pappies.
And what sorts of things are there that you think you
just
consider Pappies
acknowledging stuff? An audience, being live, being silly, taking your shirt off. You know, I think these are things that will never not be funny.
I don't agree with that.
There's no
agree with that. I do not agree with that.
There's nothing funny about male bodies.
What a huge shame.
Oh. Don't agree with that.
I've got a photo of you carrying me shoulder high.
It's one of my favourite photos.
What a photo.
Yeah, Edinburgh. But basically, I...
We're also part of a long tradition. Like that's the thing not to remember. Is like Clang before us.
Clang, Big and
Daft.
And
then, like, loads of people before them. And like people love to rewrite the history of sketch and go, oh, these guys came along and these guys came along. It's like, it's been going on for so long. Like, we're just part of it, you know? So, you know...
You're a good-looking man, Thomas Parry.
I'm having,
You look good, man.
Thanks, man.
I want to break off a piece of that.
there's a lot to break.
Clarkie, man.
There's a lot to break.
You've got a nice little torso on you, baby.
Cheers, bro.
Can we have a little cut?
I'm
we can
really...
have a little cuddle.
Thanks, man. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Pappy.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, dude.
Top off. Oh, okay, less popular than I remember it.
Harry's made a salient point. He's the only one who's finished. Clarkie.
Oh, hello. Jesus Christ. Ladies and gentlemen, top's back on. Thank you very much for listening. Give it up for Ben and the producers of the show. You can download these and all the others and blah, blah, blah.
Stuart wonderful... Goldsmith.
Thank you very much.
Stuart Goldsmith, everyone.
So that was Pappy's, ladies and gentlemen. I will chat to you slightly more in a moment, but thank you to all of the boys for coming on. Ben Clark, Tom Parry and Matthew Crosby. Do check out whatever you can check out of theirs. If you can go and see them live, do download that podcast. They have another one as well, Pappy's Bangers and Mash, which is a really fun. They kind of have a conversation and then write, like later that day, they then write sketches and songs about the chat that they've just had. So, I mean, I'm not going to try and explain it, but it's somehow like Bangers and Mash. So... do that, get in touch with all of that stuff, and yeah, that's all of that. I'm going to do a couple of thank yous, and then if you fancy sticking around for an extremely tiny Christmassy, it's not a waffle, is it? So let's call it what it is. It's a punchy, specific series of bullet points. I mean, it's very much not that, but thank you to Ashwin Caffrey and Ben at Fuzz Productions as well for producing this show and making it sound all nice and sending it over to us, sending it over to Daryl as well. Hashtag thanks, Daryl. Many thanks to Daryl Smith for his work on the show. Thank you to Emily Crosby and Matt Hoss and Olivia Phipps, who have been my log legends this year. They've been doing the vast majority of the skivvy work for me. Thanks to everyone else that's helped as well. I've had some... It's been... Okay, I'm starting waffling, so I'll sign out for this bit. If that's all you'd like to hear, then thank you very much. That concludes the podcast. Do check out comedianscomedian.com/tour for all the tour dates and see if I'm coming to you in spring. Have a wonderful Christmas. Thank you for listening. And if you'd like to stay around, please do so now. Oh, I get all breathless sometimes when I record these because it's obviously not like a conversation. Yes, Jew, we know. Shout many listeners. But because I never pause for breath, this must be one of the great skills of being a radio DJ is to have diaphragmatic control and remember to breathe. So we've got some great episodes coming up and I've yet to release Angela Barnes into the wild. I've yet to release Ellis James came round my house recently and we had a genuinely fascinating, warm, funny conversation. We focused loads on stand-up. I mean, we talked for 2 hours. If you know Ellis, yeah, I mean, you won't blink when you hear that. So I'll release an hour of that. We'll do the second hour as a little extra downloadable content thing. And remember, the 23rd of January at Soho is when those guys are going to come along and do the live Soho thing. There were 20 tickets left when I checked, and that was a week ago. So jump on it quick and you might be able to snaffle up the last one. So that one is to come. We've also got Brian Regan and Joe DeRosa still left over. I mean, I talked to Brian in June. What am I doing? I just wanted to kind of hold him back. Maybe we'll open the new year with Brian. Yeah, that'd be nice. So that's everything. Thank you. Do get in touch if you If you want to be a member of the cavalry, and so the subject line cavalry, send me an email to info@comedianscomedian.com. Thank you to everyone that's been in touch. Thank you. This is the end of the year show, isn't it? So thanks for everyone that's listened this year. Thanks for everyone that's shared it with their friends. Thank you to people. I've had a load of emails recently from people who've said things like, wow, you're getting better. I really appreciate that. It's sort of, you get a little wave of them every year or two where you just get a little pocket of emails that all say, oh, I haven't listened for a while and you've really refined what you do. Well, thank you. I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of it. And thank you for listening. I hope to all of you who email me with your... Oh, forget the emails. To all of you who listen, feeling... Okay, I'm going to get... you can hear that's one of those Goldsmith's tearing up pauses. Look, I love this show. I love that you listen. I feel so grateful. And everywhere I go... people talk to me about the show, and it's mine, it's my thing. And do you know what? It's not just my thing, it's our thing. And I'm enormously grateful to you for listening and for coming up and saying hi and doing the secret money thing and just for giving a fuck, really, and for helping and for sharing it. I'm grateful to everyone that's been on the show. I think every... what do I do? Do I do this every 2 years or something? Guys, it's really bloody changed my life. And I had... I'm not going to cry. I'm going to tell you a very nice thing that happened recently. People get in touch with me all the time about mental health. And I have a little folder on my email of emails that I get where I feel like I've made a difference to someone's life. And I suppose the thinking is, years from now when I'm old and senile, I'll look at that and go, oh look, that's really nice. That guy said he got out of the house a bit more than he usually does, or these people said they started stand-up and I helped give them a little boost. The show did, I mean, not me. But it's very positive and it makes me feel very happy. And I think over the years it has really contributed to a particular event that happened 2 days ago when my therapist got in touch with me and said, Stu, just sent me an email and said, Stu, we haven't spoken to each other, I notice, since April. So does that mean our journey, I suspect, has come to an end? And that was a very nice email to receive. So not to get too mawkish or sentimental, but screw you guys, it's Christmas. If you are someone who is listening to this, as I know many of you do and many of you get in touch to tell me, who is struggling with their mental health, because there's something about podcasting that's very intimate that people appreciate. There's something about the questions I ask, specifically the happiness ones. And there's something about comedy that people are drawn towards. So this is a real kind of, in the Venn diagram of things, there's a big mental health aspect to this. And I know a lot of you are either considering therapy or are undergoing it at the moment. Some of you will be on medication. I just wanted to say that there is an end out there. You can get happier. Yeah, I don't know. Wouldn't it be nice if I'd written this or thought about it in advance? But I can't tell you what it felt like to receive an email from my therapist saying, hey, you've forgotten to get in touch with me, which probably means you're happy now. And if you are someone who is looking... That's a thing. This is all I'm saying. That's a thing you can look forward to. No one told me that would happen that moment, ever. And I think if I'd known... It's like when you have a breakup with someone and... the first time you have your heart broken and you go through all of those different moments of going, oh, I think I'm better now. And then it's horrible again. And you go, no, maybe I'm better now. And then one morning you wake up and you're like, I mean, like an aggressive breakup. Like if someone breaks your heart or leaves you, or, you know, not just like a nice mutual closure one. But if someone breaks your heart and then one day you wake up and you realize you haven't thought about that person in ages and you realize, gosh, that means I don't care anymore. And you're free. Once that happens to you once, you can sort of look forward to it when other relationships go wrong down the line. That sounds very, very odd, but you get my point. I never realised there would be one of them with happiness. There'd be one of them with therapy when the therapist gets in touch and says, hey, look, you haven't thought about me for a while. So that is my... that's this Queen's Christmas message to you. Is, and obviously loads of you listen to this and don't have any issue with your mental health, and God love you, you know, bless your hearts. Maybe you can appreciate this by just keeping an eye out for anyone that you think might be struggling and just sitting near them and not saying anything. Sometimes the worst thing you can do is keep offering to help. Sometimes it's good just to sit near someone and just make them know that you're there
if they need you. But if you are someone who has struggled, then that is my little Christmas message to you. That's not the gift. That's not why you have to subscribe for this bit. That's a separate thing. But that moment is out there. So good luck, everyone. Have a wonderful Christmas. And I'll speak to you in the new year. Should I put this out? Should I release this one? Oh, dear. There we go. Yeah, let's chuck it out. Happy Christmas, Daryl. Happy Christmas, you, the listener. Happy Christmas, Boutros. And Jeebus bless us, everyone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.